So, welcome everyone. This is my second lecture. I think I did the first one about 2 weeks ago. So I'd like to thank everybody for being here. I'd especially like to thank everybody who's here for the second time in my lectures. Really appreciate your support. I've gotten a good amount of emails, you know, asking questions, offering support, and it's really appreciated. I really enjoyed myself last time, so that's why I'm here again. So I'm gonna start off by introducing myself for those of you who may not have been here last time. Do we have anybody that wasn't here last time? I'm just curious. Speak up in channel or something.
Yeah, me. Steve Model U.
Awesome. Okay. So this is the Logistics 102 class. As far as I know, this is the first time that a syllabus has been written for the 102 class. I did notice some mentions of it on the forum, but I guess nobody really got around to doing it. So I hammered it out this week, mostly this morning, because I was busy with school this week. But I've been working really hard on the two wiki entries that I have going right now. So even if you haven't done the 101 class, if you're a relatively experienced pilot, this should be, you know, pretty easy to understand for you. As always, if you have any questions, please speak up in the channel, in the chat channel, I should say. If you'd like to actually speak, then maybe just X up in the channel. I can call your name. So the objective of this class specifically is to expand on the foundations that were laid down in the 101 class. So again, like I said, even if you haven't taken the 101 class, this will touch on the basics a little bit, and it's applicable to really anybody that's interested in flying logistics. So the focus of this class will actually be the practical components of flying logistics. So last time it was very theoretical. It was all about fits and mods and skills. And this is going to be more about, like, how do I actually do the stuff that we're talking about. So I'm just going to outline a few rules for the class. Like I said, if you'd like to speak up in Mumble, please just X up and then I can call your name. I'd appreciate it if nobody interrupts. Otherwise, feel free to type away in the channel. Ask any questions and I will answer them as I see them. There will be a practical portion after the lecture. I'm not quite sure how long the lecture is going to take because this is the first time that I'm running it. So I'm assuming it'll probably take close to an hour. It may be more, maybe less. I'm hoping it won't be more because last time it was a little long. But if you'd like to stay for the practical part, feel free to stick around. There are some requirements for the practical part. So I hope everybody here took a look at the forums. I listed some requirements on there. If you want to check that out now and maybe get a ship ready, you might, you know, have time to run to JITA or MAR or something, whatever the closest trade hub is, and get something thrown together. But if you don't have the ships prepared, you're free to undock with us and watch what we're doing, just so you can kind of get an idea of what I'm speaking about. So yeah, let's get started. I guess you guys have war targets. I keep forgetting that. So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to review. Let me just jump ahead. There we go. We're going to review everything that we spoke about. But before I do that, I just want to, for the people who weren't here last time, I want to outline like who I am, my experience, and whatnot. So my character's name is Jordana Bauer. Nobody in EVE calls me that, and I really don't like being called that. It's kind of like the double-edged sword of playing a female character. I go by Dave. Dave is my first name. If you, you know, if you're ever on comms, if you're ever talking to me, if you're ever sending me an email, call me Dave. I answer to Dave. Everybody that I've ever been in corp with knows me as Dave, so feel free to use my first name. I'm a pretty friendly guy, I think, so if you see me in local, wave, say hi. I'll say hi back if I'm not AFK. So I'm in a corp called Mafia Redux right now, for the Alliance Phobia. It's my most recent corp. We spent a couple months in Black Legion, fairly recently. So, you know, I got a taste of the huge time dilation fleet fights there. Otherwise, I've flown tons of small gang stuff. I used to live in Curse, with a corp called eHarmony Inc., for the Alliance Brushy Brushy Brushy. We have lots of videos on YouTube of our antics, so if you're ever interested, go and just search that up. Yeah, so I've done a ton of small gang stuff. I've done some fairly, you know, medium-sized, fleet stuff. I did the stuff with Black Legion, the big time dilation fights, like I said. And I've also flown incursions with the ISN, as a Logi pilot a couple times. It's not really my cup of tea, but, you know, I've done the incursions a couple times, so I got a taste of that as well. Besides that, I've done C5 and C6 wormhole stuff. I have three characters who can fly triage archons. I love flying logistics. It's really, like, I used to play WoW, and I've always played a healer, so the idea of playing a support has always appealed to me. Oh, thanks for that, Lish. Yeah, so that's me. If you have any questions about me, I'd be more than happy to answer. But anyway, we'll get started. So in the first class we spoke, like I said, it was mostly theoretical stuff, so we had a little bit of discussion about the different ships as well as the different roles. So this is something that I just want to reiterate really quickly. So something that a lot of people don't think about is actually when you're flying logistics or support is that the way that you fly it really has to, like, gel really well with your fleet composition. So we have the skirmish, the brawling, and the large fleet roles. And what I mean when I talk about this, and I might refer to these types of combat, if you will, a few times throughout the lecture. Skirmish, when I say skirmish, I'm generally talking about small gang stuff with very fast, kitey ships. You know, not really heavily tanked, but lots of DPS, very fast. So these are, you know, your Cinnable, your Vagabond fleets, your Talos fleets. Generally battlecruiser and cruiser stuff, really fast nano type stuff. And then you have your brawl role or type of fleet combat. So this is where you're using generally armor. Everybody is really heavily tanked. Everybody's slow. Usually you'll see everybody with an afterburner. So this is like, you know, get in close and just beat the hell out of each other and see who comes out on top. So that's what I mean when I'm talking about brawling. And then we have the large fleet, which is just, you know, 200 people on each side, time dilation, people are exploding all over the place, you know, maybe there's capital ships involved. It's generally just chaotic, and, you know, the fits for the different ships can, like, each of the different ships, whether it's the, you know, the Amar, Galente, whatever, each of them have their own way of fitting into these different roles. So this is, again, something that I'll be referring back to. So we also spoke about all the modules. So we spoke about the remote assistance modules. So your armor reps, your shield reps, your remote tracking computers, your energy transfers. Then you have your prop mods, so your ABs and MWDs, your tank, so your armor buffer, your shield buffer, your resist mods. Capacitor stability, so your rechargers, your boosters, your triple C rig, and then electronic warfare countermeasures, so your ECCM, capacitor batteries, sensor boosters, and then rigs, drones, and utility mods like smart bombs and, you know, little whore guns that you put on your scimitar to get on kill mails. So, yeah, that's basically what we spoke about. And then again, we spoke a lot about fitting as well. So we took all of the knowledge that we had about the ships and the mods, and then we spoke about some fits and, you know, applying the different ships to the different configurations for skirmishing, brawling, or large fleet stuff. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is the fleet interface. So again, this is the first of many practical things that we're going to speak about. But the watch list, what it does is it allows you to see the health bars of the people that you add to it. You can add anybody in your fleet to your... no more guns. You can add anybody in your fleet to your watch list. And it shows, as you can see, three little bars. Each one is for shield, armor, structure, starting from left to right. So the left one is shield. and what it allows you to do is it actually allows you to see your fleet members' health bars without having to target them. And then you can also use it to lock your fleet members as well. So you can control click on it. And I find that that's really useful because... I think that control clicking is probably the fastest way to lock your target. So you can fit up to 15 people on it, and as you can see here, the names will flash red and the bars will fill up as damage is taken. So if you want to add to your watch list, what you do is you can right click on a fleet member in the window and you can simply add them to the watch list. So that's what you're seeing me do there. Another way you can do it is you can right-click on them in chat, and then if you go to the little fleet pop-out, you can add to watch list there. And then what you can also do is you can right-click on the squad commander to add the entire squad to your watch list. So generally when you're using the watch list, because it can only fit 15 people, it's kind of important that you prioritize who you put on it. So this is just a general list of, you know, things that you might want to consider or who you might want to consider putting on there. You know, everybody has their own opinion about these sort of things, so you're free to disagree or whatever, but this is probably a good general idea of who you should be thinking about putting on your watch list. So the first one is your fleet commander, and as you can see, I've included a little quote there. I don't think I've ever heard anybody said that, but you can imagine that some fleet commanders may think that way.
Quick question, do we have a fleet set up?
Not yet. So secondary to your fleet commander, which I always just throw my fleet commander on there simply because if the fleet commander goes down, you're probably, you know, there's probably going to be chaos. So it's a good idea to have him on there. Your fleet anchors and anybody that's kind of second in command in your fleet should also be on there. So like your logistics squad commanders or whatever, you know, every corp will have their own style for, you know, how they set up their leadership. So anybody that's important, you can add them on there as well. Like if you have a secondary FC or a target caller, something like that. And then you also, what you want to think about is the roles that people are fulfilling. So you want to think about the light tackle. So these are your interceptors and your interdictors. So these are ships that can get popped like very easily if they're not careful. So you generally want to keep them up because they are holding down the guys that you're trying to kill. You generally want to throw anybody that's using electronic warfare on there as well. So if you have any recons in your fleet, Arazus, Lachesis, Falcons, Rooks, anything like that, Curse, Hogan, you know, throw those on there because chances are if you get into a fight, the enemies are going to go for them first. Otherwise, you have your other recons and your support, so, you know, your heavy tackle, your Webers. What you can also do is you can add the other logistics pilots on there as well. If you have enough space. Yeah, your scouts, so usually in my fleets that I'm used to, I would the interceptors would be the scouts, so that kind of gets included in that. But yeah, definitely include your scouts as well. And then anybody that, if you can fit the other logistics, throw those on there. And then anybody that has a stupidly expensive ship who shouldn't be on the field at all. So, you know, maybe the guy that brought his Macariel to the capital fight or something like that. Yeah, if you're in a cap chain, throw your partner on there. But you'll always have them targeted anyway, so you'll be able to monitor their health very easily. Yeah, anybody that's flying an AT ship or a limited edition ship, sure. Does anybody have questions about the watch list before I continue? Just X up in channel or something. Or go ahead and type your question. I'm just going to grab a drink here. Give me a sec. Dan, about the watch list being laggy, there is a delay in the watch list, so it's not always reliable, I guess, if there's lots of damage coming in. There is a small delay in, like, say, the guy will be at 50% and it'll show him at maybe 75 or something like that, or if he's losing large chunks of his health, and yeah, it does get delayed, so it's not something that you should rely on, but it's something that's useful to see who's actually getting hit, because their name will flash red. I find that the name flashing red is actually more useful than the health bars, because it tells me who's actually being primaried, and it can give you an advance warning that person is going to take some damage. You can't lock from the chat window, but you can lock from the fleet. I don't know if you can do it from the fleet window, but I know you can do it from the watch list by control clicking. Yes, the fleet watch list is different. After the lecture, we're going to do a little demonstration, so don't worry too much about like getting it set up, because I'll help everybody get it set up afterward. That'll be the first thing that we do. So the next part of the fleet interface that we're going to talk about is broadcasts. So these broadcasts are used to give out orders and designate targets. So, excuse me, had to burp there. So if you've ever been in a fleet before, your fleet commander will generally use this to designate DPS targets. But you can also use it to receive broadcasts from your fleet members if they require reps. So this shows up at the bottom of the fleet window, so whenever somebody is broadcasted. So as you can see there, Jordana Bauer has need shield, so I had broadcasted there. So that'll show up at the bottom, and then if you also go to the history tab of your fleet window, it will show a broadcast history. Now, this is useful because often what you'll see is your fleet commander will designate a target, and then somebody will broadcast for shield, and then another target will be designated, and somebody else will broadcast for shield, and you'll get a lot of things coming in there, so you kind of have to filter it through, but using the history tab actually makes it really easy to track. I believe whoever is most recent is always on top, so if you're wondering, you know, oh god, who just broadcasted for shield, then they'll always be at the top, and just like the watchlist window, you can use this to control click. So whenever I'm flying logistics, this is generally what I'm doing the most, is watching the history tab and just control clicking whoever broadcasts at the top of the list. So you send broadcasts, if you've never done it before, you can actually do it by using those buttons at the bottom there, so you can see it in the screenshot. So from left to right, excluding the first one, you have broadcasting for armor, shield, and capacitor. I would recommend keybinding them. I have them keybound to Z, X, and C. So I believe C is for my capacitor, Z is for shield, and X is for armor, like in that order. So if you go to the shortcuts menu when you hit escape, it's under broadcasts, I believe. So you can set up the keybinds there. So I would definitely navigation, there you go. So I would definitely look into keybinding them. If you're ever going to fly in a fleet, ever, you want to have these things broadcasted, because it's just so convenient to have it, you know, one key click away, as opposed to having to click it with your mouse. So the first thing that we're going to talk about that really, you know, is a practical application of what we were talking about last week is energy transfer mechanics. This is a really big topic when it comes to logistics, and everybody kind of has their own way of doing things involving this, and everybody has an opinion on it and whatnot. I chose not to go over it last week because I felt that this is a topic that really deserves to have, you know, a good 20-minute discussion devoted to it. So that's what I was hoping to do today. Maybe not 20 minutes, but who knows. So yeah, this is, again, this is a huge topic in flying logistics, and if it's ever something that you want to do, you're going to have to be familiar with all of this. So capacitor transmitters allow you to send capacitor to your target. So like any mod, they cost capacitor to use. But the interesting thing about this is that once you level the capacitor emission system skill, it actually reduces the capacitor usage. So this, when you use it, you actually end up sending more to your target than you use. So as you can see on the right is a screenshot of a medium transmitter. And as I've underlined, the activation cost is 90 gigajoules, whereas the amount that it transfers is 324. So that's it's a pretty big disparity there. And that is actually with the augurer bonus, which doubles the output. So on a normal ship, it would be like 90 gigajoules and half of 324, which is still, you know, a net gain of capacitor. So out of the 8 support cruisers that we have, the Augurer, Osprey, Guardian, and Basilisks are the ones that have bonuses to capacitor transmission. So what ends up happening in fleets is by transferring to each other, they can actually maintain a positive capacitor loop, which means that there's always going to be a net gain in the capacitor. So you can use this to essentially create energy, which kind of doesn't make any sense, but it is what it is. So as you can see here, the first, I guess, method of taking advantage of this is pairing up. So what you do here is this is used in small gangs or setups where you only really have one capacitor transmitter to use, or it'll be used in a fleet where maybe you only have two logistics. So what this involves is two logistics pilots pairing up, and all they do is target each other and activate their transmitters. So again, this creates the infinite loop, and the person on the receiving end of each transfer will gain capacitor, and because they're going circle, they will infinitely just create more capacitor. So pairing up is really easy to coordinate. You know, you always have the one guy that you stay in range with him, and you just transfer cap, and you'll always be relatively comfortable in terms of your capacitor management. The con of it, though, is that it's susceptible to jamming. So if one of the pilots ends up getting jammed out, then the other one will not have the capacitor coming in. And what will actually happen is they will be transferring to the jammed target, but they won't be getting anything back. So they will actually use up a lot of their capacitor if they're not careful. And then in the small setups where you're pairing up, neutralization can be very dangerous. You know, it's very easy for an Armageddon or a Balegorn to come in and just, you know, destroy an Augurer's capacitor in one shot, basically. So the next method is actually called a cap chain or cap train or whatever you call it in your corp. I just call it a chain. So this is used when you have more than two pilots, so you need at least three. You can also use it when you have an odd number, so you don't have an even number in order to get your guys paired up. And it's generally used, you know, when you have Guardians and Basilisks, because the Basilisk and Guardian can use two cap transfers, whereas the Augurer and Osprey have a harder time fitting two, so they generally only use one. So in this case, everybody in the logistics squad will chain together. And what they'll do is they'll chain to one person, and then that person will chain to another person, and eventually it'll come around, and the last guy in the chain will chain to the first guy. So what you end up with is a perfect circle of capacitor transmission. So everybody is receiving capacitor, everybody is giving capacitor. So in the setups where you only have one capacitor transmitter, you'll only see the pilots targeting forward. But if you have setups that use two capacitor transmitters, the pilots will generally transfer to the person in front of them in the chain and the person behind them. So in that case, everybody actually has two incoming sources of capacitor, which actually makes them extremely stable. So the pros of using this is that it's a lot less susceptible to jamming, especially mainly when you're using the double transmitter setup, so generally Guardians and Basilisks. Whenever you're flying a Guardian or a Basilisk, you can generally be cap stable if you're only getting one energy transfer. So even if one of the guys that are transferring to you get jammed, you'll still have somebody else transferring to you, and you should be cap stable if you have decent skills. The skill requirement is not that high for you to be stable at that point. So that makes it very strong against neutralization as well, simply because every single ship is receiving two sets of capacitor for the two that it's setting out. So it's actually doubling the bonus that it gets. But as a lot of people will complain about, it's actually can be difficult to coordinate as fleets get larger. And then it can become very chaotic if somebody dies. So if somebody gets dropped out of the chain, it can be very difficult in the heat of battle to get it set up again and say, okay, well, this guy died, now you have to transfer to this guy instead, and changing everything around. So it can be difficult if you lose somebody. I personally don't find it to be too difficult. I've never really had an issue with cap chaining. It just, you know, you just have to kind of trust the dudes that you're flying with to, you know, communicate with you, and you need to communicate with them. And, you know, I think that once you're kind of on the same page, and it doesn't really become much of an issue anymore. And then if you implement systems that can, you know, stop the chaos from happening, that also helps as well. So one of the great ways to coordinate a logistics chain is to actually use a logistics channel. So this is a really common tactic as far as I know. I've done this a ton. Pretty much any big fleet that uses a ton of Guardians or Basilisks will do this. So usually what this involves is just a private channel with all of the logistics pilots present. We're actually going to be doing something like this in the practical. So this is used to coordinate pairs, chains, anchors, drone assists, smart bombs, jams, anything. So, you know, it's just for the logistics pilots to coordinate with each other and to communicate without, you know, flooding the fleet comms with what they're talking about. So whenever you have a pair, usually you'll have a leader that assigns people together, or he may assign people into a chain. So a really, really easy way to coordinate a chain is to simply use the channel list. So as long as it's not a delayed channel, and everybody is showing up on there, as you can see in the picture, then if everybody just targets the person under them in the list, then you have a perfect chain, and then the person at the bottom just goes all the way up to the top. So if the logistic commander says or refers to chaining down or one down or anything like that, this is generally what they'll be talking about. So if you're using a setup, again, with the Guardians and Basilisks that use two transmitters, what you can do is you can double link your chain. This is what's usually called as a one-up, one-down chain, is what I've heard it called. So in this case, you have everybody in the chain target the person above them and the person below them, and then link up with them. So this is the kind of chain that has a lot of capacitor stability. It's very secure, simply because you have transfers going in both directions around the chain. Is anybody lost by this whole chaining idea? I probably hear complaints about this the most out of anything that people struggle with when it comes to logistics, or I guess it's very easy for it to become chaotic and just to screw up. Everybody clear? Anybody confused? Alright, cool. I'm going to grab a drink again. Give me 1 second. Alright, so some things to consider when you're using a logistics channel. It's generally a good idea if somebody dies that they actually leave the channel. I find that this is very effective because it allows people to quickly and very efficiently get the chain up and running again. So usually what they can do is this, they could say, okay, I died. They'll say that in channel, and then they'll leave the channel. And assuming that people are paying attention, they should theoretically be able to get the chain running again. So again, I just want to stress that capacitor chaining is not as hard as it sounds. Like I said, I've heard a lot of complaints about it. I've never had much trouble with it. You know, as long as you are familiar with everything and you communicate with the guys that you're flying with, it's usually not too bad. So again, the key to being successful is just communicating and using proper procedures. So, you know, as long as you say, okay, I died, you leave the channel, assuming this is what your corp asks you to do, and you follow these procedures, chances are things are going to be all right. So it's really important that even when you're fighting, you pay attention to the channel. You know, people will use it for all kinds of things, like, I need capacitor, or hey, put drones on this guy, or help me do this, or, you know, it's just there for the logistics pilot to communicate with each other, so take advantage of it, for sure. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is drone usage. This is something that we touched on last week, but I didn't really get into too much detail with it. This is something that a lot of people will have differing opinions about. I know this for a fact because I've argued with people about it. But every single logistics ship can use drones. Drones are just a fundamental part of EVE. You know, they're very powerful if you invest the skill time into them. So I would never recommend, even for a logistics pilot, to not have drone skills, because I just find that no matter what you're flying, it's so important to have these. So even if you have an unbonus ship and you have really good drone skills, you could get potentially 80 DPS out of your drones, and that's a high ballpark with warriors. So with goblins, it would be even higher. But, you know, it's free DPS that you can just pull out, and, you know, it's there. So there's really no reason not to use drones of some type. So the first type of drones, the first type of drones are scout drones. So these are your warriors, your hobgoblins, your acolytes, and hornets, I think the other ones are called. I don't know. Everybody just use warriors or hobgoblins anyway. So scout drones will add free DPS to your fleet. Again, there's no reason not to use drones. If you go out with an empty drone bay, you're not using your ship to your full potential. So scout drones are really easy to use because you can really just assist them to somebody else and they will basically shoot for you. This allows logistics pilots to get onto kill mails, which is my favorite part of PvP and the most important part of the lecture. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Not really, that's a little bit of sarcasm, but, they're very useful for warding off smaller ships, so, you know, if an interceptor is bugging you, you can really mess up his day with some warriors if you have decent skills. About the cap chain question, If you're using a double setup, then yeah, if one person gets jammed, it really doesn't affect the chain. Like if you go into EFT and you, you know, turn on a Guardian setup or a Basilisk setup that has two energy transfers and all the reps running, and if you give them one energy transfer, with Logi 5, I'm pretty sure they are comfortably cap stable with only one coming source of cap. You can quote me on that. So the pros of using scout drones is that you get more DPS for your fleet, which is always great. And they are actually quite powerful with good skills. Like I said, you can get 80 DPS out of 5 warriors, and it's, boom, 80 DPS, whatever. There you go. The cons, of course, is that if you're operating in low sec, and you have aggressive, if you have your safety on aggressive or whatever it is, then you will lose sec status for aggressing as opposed to the normal suspect timer or whatever you get for repairing people. They're not reliable DPS. I've had so many times where, like, my drones didn't get to the target in time, and I did on the kill mail, and I was really sad, and I wanted to quit flying logistics and everything, and it was just a bad day. But not really, like, but a lot of the times they won't actually get to the target, so it kind of sucks when that happens. And then, of course, they get you aggressed. But we will talk about aggression mechanics a little after. So your second set of drones are ECM drones. These are great because you can use them for offense or defense. they can save you from tackle, so if an interceptor is on you and you're trying to get away, you can hit him with your ECM drones and you might get away. On most days, you have a better chance of, like, getting hit by lightning because ECM drones just, like, don't want to work the time. It's just the way it is. But the pros here is that they're very potent against enemy logistics. So if you have, like, 5 Guardians in your fleet and they all have 5 EC drones and they all put the same person, that guy's going to get jammed at least once. Like, it's kind of a statistic, you know, guarantee. Not necessarily, but chances are if you have 25 of them flying around, you're going to have a little bit of success. And then again, you can use them to get you out of sticky situations if you're extremely lucky, and you should probably buy a lottery ticket if you ever do get away with them. Cons is that they, like I said, they're purely based on chance, and a lot of the time, the chance is just not on your side. They are a high priority for smart bombing, and they're extremely easy to kill. So usually if the other side has smart bombing support, that smart bomb is going to go straight for the EC drones that are on the Logi. And you can't assist them because, I don't really know why, but you can't assist them, so you have to micromanage them, which is just another thing that you have to deal with when you're trying to fly a Logi. And then we have our Logi drones, or bots, as they're referred to in the game. So these can be used to add extra repair power to your existing logistics lineup. They're actually pretty good when they're bonused. I'm not quite sure about this because I haven't really looked into it, but apparently you can basically get, like, another full repper's amount of repair out of the drones if you have 5 of them and they're bonused. So it's almost like you have an extra repair module running. So the pros about using logistics drones is that you can actually take advantage of the ship bonuses. I believe it's like the Scythe and the Execurer, and I think Bassy and Guardian have the bonuses to it. And then they will actually, if you manage to engage them prior to getting jammed, they will actually continue repairing. The cons. Now, I am a part of the camp that doesn't like Logi drones. I really don't think that Logi drones have a place in fleets right now, simply because I find that the drone system is too cumbersome. It's just not designed very well. It's like, it's begging for an overhaul, and people have been asking for this for the longest time because just assist mechanics and drone mechanics in general are just pretty outdated at this point in the game, I would say. So the reason that I say that is because although they can repair, which is great, they can be destroyed, and they shouldn't really be relied on because of that, because especially if you're using light bots, it's very possible that one guy with a couple smart bombs is just going to completely wipe them out, and you're not going to have a chance to react. Another thing that you really have to think about is that they have the travel time and the input delay. So if you ever notice that when you engage your drones, there's like a half second where they don't immediately start flying, and then they have to travel to their target. So that could actually be very cumbersome if you're rushing to get reps on a target. And I think the biggest thing about this, and again, this is just my opinion, but I really don't think that you should substitute drones for another logistics pilot. I think that, you in your fleet and they could rep 2000 DPS. If you're going up against a fleet with 2200 DPS, so 200 more than you can repair, I don't think that it's appropriate for drones to be making up that extra 200 DPS, because there's always a chance that they'll be destroyed, and if you're relying on them to keep you alive, I really don't think that that's a safe thing to do. So I really think that, you know, if you feel that you need more reps, don't go with drones, just get another pilot to kind of bring your fleet into line there. They're great because they add additional reps, like, that's awesome, but I personally don't use them, but, you know, you could argue either side for it. So the next thing that we're going to talk about is electronic warfare. We touched on this, that picture makes me laugh every time I see it. Yeah, Logi drones follow the same conventions, that's correct. So electronic warfare is something that we spoke briefly about last week. We spoke about the different modules that you can use to, there you go. You definitely share my point of view. Sorry, what was I saying? Yeah, we spoke about the modules that you can use to defend yourself against electronic warfare last week. But what I want to do today is just really talk about each type and, you know, give you a general idea of how they work and how to defend against them and in what context you'll see them in fleets. So, electronic countermeasures, or just ECM, attempt to jam you, so that means stopping you from targeting. So every ECM mod has a jamming strength. Can somebody link, just one of the modules? Maybe I can do it there. Like, just a Hypnos module, any ECM, just any single one ECM module. Oh my god, my Eve client is exploding. There it goes. Alright, so there's a multi-spec and a Hypnos ECM. So if you just go to the attributes tab, you can take a look. So they have their gravimetric, LADAR, magnetometric, radar strength. So each one of the ECM modules has a strength associated with them. And when they're used on you, what actually happens is it's compared with your sensor strength on your ship. So when you get jammed, it means that you can't target for 20 seconds. So if you take a look at every single ship has a sensor strength, so no matter what ship you're in, you can take a look at this right now. You can see that it shows the radar sensor strength here because I'm in an Amarian ship, the Augur specifically, and it has two ECCM modules active. So ECM is countered by using ECCM, which increases your sensor strength. So you can use ECCM, which is medium slot and is an active module. There we go, an ECCM gravimetric mod there in chat. Thanks for that. And then you have your backup arrays, which are the low slots, and they're passive. So they're not activated by clicking on them. They're just always turned on. So each different race has a different sensor type. This is like the most pointless thing in the whole game. Like, you don't really need to know anything about this besides what sensor strength your ship uses. So, you know, Amar's radar, Kaldari's gravimetric, Galenti's magnetometric, Mimitar is LADAR. So always make sure that you're using the correct type for the ship that you're flying. If you're interested in more information on that, then I would suggest looking into an ECM-related class. But for all intents and purposes, all you need to know is what type your ship uses so you can match up your modules. Yeah, the colors are a great way to go with it.
What color is Caldari?
Blue, I think.
So for instance, if I'm running a Caldari, like a Basilisk, I think it's a Caldari, right?
Yep.
Would fit like one of each of those?
No, you would fit the gravimetric one.
Oh, the gravimetric one. I would just need just the one, though, probably.
Yep. Usually, a comfortable sensor strength is anything over 35. So as you can see in the screenshot there, I've brought the Auger up to a sensor strength of 47-ish, and that's with two ECCM modules. The Tech 2 variant, so like Basilisk, like you said, will have a higher base sensor strength, so that's a bit of a bonus there. Generally, the Guardian fits that I use only use one. Basilisk, I think, only use one as well.
Can you expect to be jammed, though?
It's always a possibility. Like, it's always a mathematical possibility, no matter how high your strength is. I think a carrier can get up to, like, 90. A Falcon can jam, or even a Scorpion can do about 20. So, you know, if you have 90 sensor strength on a carrier, it can still be jammed, you know, 20 out of 90 times. So the ships that you want to watch out for specifically as a logistics pilot are generally the Caldari ships because they're the ones that specialize in ECM. So you have the Griffin and the Kitsune, which are the frigates, Blackbird, Falcons, and Rooks, which are the cruisers. And the Falcon, of course, is the cloaky one, so it gets used a lot in high-sec games and stuff like that. And then you have your Scorpion and your Widow, which are the battleships. You'll never see a Widow in a fleet fight. If you do, it's probably a dead Widow. But you'll see Scorpion sometimes, but generally they'll be the first thing to die, because nobody likes ECM. Sorry, I'm just going to grab another drink here. I have a bit of a sore throat, but I'm trucking through. So sensor dampening is the next type of electronic warfare. Sensor dampening was not popular for a long time, and then all of a sudden it got really popular when they redid the cruisers because the Celestis got a bonus to it. So now you actually see this a lot, and it's actually like really effective because everybody today is using ECCM because they don't want to be jammed by Falcons and stuff like that. So sensor damps have come into their own very recently simply because everybody is fitting ECCM and nobody's using a sensor booster. What sensor dampening does is it lowers your capability to target. So that doesn't mean what it does is it decreases your targeting range, your targeting speed, or both. If you've ever missioned against, I don't know if it's Serpentis or Garistas, but one of the two of them sensor damp all the time, and it's really annoying because so all of a sudden you'll just lose all your targets and you need to move within like 10 kilometers in order to target anything. So this is probably the most annoying besides being jammed. Yeah, it's Serpentis. There you go. So the annoying thing about these is that they're always successful in lowering your stats as long as they're in range. So unlike ECM, which can fail depending on your sensor strength, you can't avoid being hit by sensor dampening. But what you can do is you can counter them by using a sensor booster, which literally does the opposite of what a sensor damp does. So while a sensor booster will increase the your targeting range and decrease your targeting speed, or sorry, make it faster, a sensor damp will make it slower and shorter. So if you have a sensor booster, it's possible to directly counteract the effects. So the ships to watch out for in this case are the Mollus and the Carries, which are the Galente frigates. And then the Celestis, which is the Galente cruiser. And the Arazu and Lachesis, which are the Recon. Yeah, sure. Basically, the way that scripts work is you load it into the module like ammo, and it changes the way that the module will work. So if you actually click on the remote sensor dampener there, what you can do is, if you see that it reduces scan resolution, which is your targeting speed, and then your targeting range, what you can do is you can put a script into the dampener that will either do only targeting range or only targeting speed, which is scan resolution. So if it is scripted, it will only do one of the effects, but it will pretty much double the effect to what it previously was. So if you have like two sensor dampeners that have targeting range scripts in them, they're really going to do a lot of damage to the enemy's ability to target out to long distances. And sensor boosters work the exact same way. So they have a range script and a scan resolution script, which is again targeting speed. So you can script your sensor booster depending on if you're being range damped or targeting time damped in order to counteract it. Is that clear?
Do you have to reactivate your module if you change the script? Or can you do it in between during a cycle?
Yeah, you need to turn it off before you can change the script. Alright, cool. So we're going to talk about... Well, the scan resolution is the targeting speed. So, like, the way that this will work is they will... If you get jammed and then they're able to put targeting speed scripts on you, what they can actually do is make it so that you can't target in time to land reps. So if they're able to break your targeting, then they can slow down your ability to retarget. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about this more, so I'm going to move on to the next part. So energy neutralization is capacitor drain. So just like dampening, it's always successful when in range, but there are more ways to counter it. It's not as bad as the other two in most cases, I guess you could say. Energy chains especially will be very strong against neutralizing, especially when they use double transmitters. Capacitor boosters are also a good way to counteract them because you simply just throw in some boosters into your injector and then just start boosting your cap up as they newt you. Capacitor batteries, which actually increase your cap, they also that reflects back part of the neutralization. So that's really awesome because you're actually making them newt themselves at the same time. And the act of neutralizing is actually very capacitor intensive for them as well. So if you're reflecting part of it back to them, it makes it that much harder for them to do it. However, passive setups that use cap rechargers and CPRs in the low slot, capacitor power relays for those of you who are not familiar with that acronym. So anything that's passively recharged, they are going to be vulnerable to being neuted because once you get below a certain point, your capacitor really slows down in the speed that it regenerates. So a capacitor booster is a lot better because it can literally just, boom, you have 800 gigajoules of capacitor and you're good to go. So next we're going to talk about some defensive tactics, especially in relation to what we were talking about. So, if you're being jammed, the most important thing, and this applies to everything, is just stay calm no matter what. Eve is a game of adrenaline rush. I find that that's like, you know, part of the reason why I play it. I've heard lots of people talk about this. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to it. But it's really important that you just, you know, chill out and just relax. I've probably died in DPS ships much more often than I have in logistics ships, so it's really a safe way to fly, I would say. So if you're being jammed, just stay calm. Maybe let your fleet commander know. It may not always be able to speak up in comms, but, you know, if you know that you're not going to get yelled at for it, just be like, hey, FC, Falcon on grid is jamming, and that's all they need to know. But chances are they've already noticed, and they're working on getting the ECM off the field anyway, because they're generally a high-priority target. Something else you can do is, if you happen to announce it to fleet, one of your fast tackle can scare them away. Falcon pilots especially are very skittish. Like, they will run and get off the field as soon as somebody, you know, looks in their direction. So if you send an interceptor or two to go mess with them, he's probably gonna just warp away or cloak up. And then if you're being attacked or jammed, I should say, by ECM drones, maybe call for some smart bombing support or use your own drones to kill them. Warriors are very good at killing ECM drones. Yeah, look at that face. It can't be dangerous. The Falcon itself is not dangerous. It's just, you know, all the guys shooting at you and you can't shoot back. So back to sensor dampening. If you're being damped, take stock of the situation. So maybe open up your fitting window and check your stats. So how low is your targeting range? How much has it been reduced by? Are you finding that your targets are coming in very slowly? If it is an issue, and it may not be, let the FC or the other logistics pilots know. One thing that you can do that really screws over dampening is just pre-lock your targets. If they are dampening your targeting speed and you already have everybody locked up, it literally won't do anything because you already have your targets locked. And assuming you don't have to unlock somebody and relock or change targets, it's not going to affect. The biggest thing is that people will use the ranged scripts on sensor damps in order to make it so that you have to move closer in order to repair. And I've died to this before, and it's really frustrating because you get stuck in a situation where it's like, okay, I can only target up to 20 kilometers and I can't repair my guys that are 50 kilometers away. Do I go closer and risk dying, or do I stay back here and hope they kill the damps? But time, you generally just want to stay away, because chances are if you come closer, you're being baited in and you will be killed. But of course the best way to counteract it is to use a sensor booster. So, you know, if you know that you're going to fight a fleet that has a lot of Celestis's and Lachesis and Arazu or whatever, throw on a sensor booster and make sure that you have both script types in your cargo. So back to being neutralized, again, take stock of the situation. So look at your capacitor. A lot of the times, you may be being neuted, but maybe you're being neuted by a frigate, and it's not really doing anything. If it's becoming a problem, then maybe let your FC know, let the other logistics know that you won't be able to help out. But the most important thing is that you really micromanage your mods. So just be careful with your capacitor. Make sure that you watch your percentage and hover over it so you can see how much you have. The most important thing, and this really applies to most ships, is you should always try to keep your capacitor above 30% at all costs. And I will explain this a little later on. But just keep that in mind. 30% is basically the sweet spot for regeneration. So when you're trying to manage your capacitor, and this is kind of something that you can apply to any type of ship, but this is probably the most skill-intensive thing that has to do with logistics. So some of your modules don't have to actually be running all the time. So if nobody's taking damage, you don't have to be repairing. You don't have to be, you know, having your prop mod on all the time, flying around. Just be aware of what modules you have running. One thing that you can do, especially in micro warp drive setups, is you can pulse your micro warp drive instead of running it all the time. most micro warp drive setups will not be stable in any case, so usually just run it for a cycle or two if you need to get somewhere, and then just turn it off. Another thing that you can do is you can use a capacitor booster to cheat when you're being neutralized. So what this means is if you're being neutered, even if you're at zero capacitor and you have a capacitor booster, you are still able to get some reps out, and you might even be able to get your tank turned back on. So what you can do here is you can activate the capacitor booster right after you get neutered in order to get a quick burst of capacitor, and then you can mash all of your mods to try to turn them on before you get neutered again. This is something that I do often when I'm flying an Oneros. If I ever get neutered out, just throw in an 800 into your capacitor booster, hit the cap booster, and then turn on your damage control, turn on all your tank mods, and see if you can repair people before you lose the capacitor. So again, keep the capacitor above 30%. I'm not going to go into too much detail about this, but basically the way that it works is the closer you get to 30%, the higher your recharge is. So at 100%, your capacitor recharge is very slow. And then as you approach 30, it gets really high, and that's where it peaks. And then once it drops below 25%, you lose a lot of your regeneration. So the spot for regeneration is within the 25 to 30 range. I say keep it above 30 so that if you do get neutered, you don't get brought below 24. So like I said, life or death, just keep your capacitor above 30% and you will be able to regenerate eventually. So this is something that you'll be dealing with a lot as a logistics pilot. It's just kind of the way that it is being primaried or shot at. So the most important thing is just remain calm. It's so tempting to yell in comms, "I'm being shot, I need reps, help, help, help," but just stay calm. Especially as a logistics pilot, you will get used to this, and you will learn to trust the other pilots that are flying with you to be able to repair you. So broadcast for repairs, shield or armor. Make sure that you do the right one, and don't broadcast more than once unless it's been like 20 seconds and you still haven't gotten any repairs. Again, I have to reiterate, don't yell in comms. Don't repair people who yell in comms, because that's just rude. I'm sure any experienced logistics pilot can agree with that. Educate your pilots to use broadcasts. Use your broadcasts yourself. We got an open mic from someone, I think. But just chill out. Just broadcast. Trust that your guys are going to get you out of there, or maybe not, and then warp your pod away. If you're being primaried, overheat your tank. Some people don't know this, but you can actually overheat your hardeners. Your invulnerability field, your armor hardeners, your whatever, you can overheat them. Most active modules can be overheated. So you can shift click on them to overheat them, and that will actually increase the resistances that you have. You can also overheat your prop mod to make your ship go a little faster, and that can help you avoid a little bit of damage. But usually if you're dying, you're going to be scrammed anyway, and you won't be able to micro warp drive. And last but not least, if you die, just get your pod out, let your Logi bros know that you've gone down, and then make sure you leave the channel so they can get the chain going again if you are using a chain. And finally, we have two defensive tactics that will change depending on the kind of fleet that you're in, and this is a throwback to what I mentioned before about kiting and skirmishing versus brawling. So when you're kiting, the fits that you'll be using will generally be very fast and not as tanky. So it's really important that when you're flying a kiting setup, like a scimitar, that you be aware of what's around you. You should use the tactical overview by pressing Control D. I love the tactical overview. I use it all the time. It's just a great tool for seeing how far things are away from you without having to like scroll through the list. Probably the most important thing of PvP in general, I guess, is to always be aligned to something so you can get out. This is really important for kiting setups as well, because if somebody's burning towards you, you can just warp out. So when you are kiting, the idea is to stay away from the enemy fleet to avoid damage. The idea is not to tank, but to avoid damage. So your goal here is to be as far away as possible while still being able to support your fleet. So the things that you need to watch out for are the fast ships that can lock you down. So the interceptors, anything that has long-range tackle, so the Irazu and Lachesis. I love flying the Lachesis because you can lock down people from upwards of 80 kilometers. The Rapier and the Hugin can web you, but if they web you at the wrong time, they can actually help you warp away faster. And Proteuses and Lokis, which will be extremely slow because generally they're armor tanked, but if they catch you, they're not letting go because they are just very heavy tackle and they are difficult to kill. What are you asking about, Grizz? Are you asking about my overview in particular, or...
Yeah, how you set up your overview. If uni standard is fleet and enemy is separated, and sometimes it's tricky for me to switch it when I fly with Logi.
When I fly logistics, I don't use the overview at all. I find that it's too hard to find people on the list. Usually if somebody's being shot at, they will broadcast and I will be able to target them through the broadcast menu. That's just how the fleets that I run with are run. Like, it's expected that you know how to broadcast, basically. So if you don't broadcast, you die. It's kind of just, you know, it's tough, but you learn very quickly to do it. So I actually don't use the overview for logistics at all. I use a general overview for my first tab, and I use a PvP overview on the second tab, which shows enemies and neutrals. And then my other tabs are like directional and zones.
Pod's favorite.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, so I'm a big supporter of just using the watch list and using the broadcast system. I think that they are very fast and responsive systems, and I think that once people know how to use them, you can just land really quickly as opposed to, you know, trying to scroll through the list. You know, if anybody is getting in trouble, like if they're a small ship, you should already have them watchlisted so you'll know, you know, what their health looks like and you'll be able to target them very easily. So back to this. Again, if you're kiting, if a ship breaks off from the pack and goes towards you, you need to be prepared to get out. I warp off the grid in a scimitar all the time. You know, it's better that the Logi doesn't die than the Logi dying, because I'm not repairing at all if I'm dead. So even if I have to warp off grid and come back and somebody dies in that time, it's better for me to survive and come back and help out than to just die for no reason. So it's actually not bad to warp off the grid sometimes if you have to. You know, just pick something that's close, warp off and warp back. Again, I do this all the time. It makes it really easy to survive if you just, you know, if an interceptor's burning at you, he gets close and then get away, and he wasted all of his time, so. Signature tanking, this applies to Guardians and Basilisks mainly, and their Tech 1 counterparts. So this is used for the heavier support ships, so just very, very tanky, a lot of EHP. And what it involves is moving fast and being small to avoid damage. So you'll generally be using an afterburner, because micro warp drives make your signature larger, which makes you easier to hit. So even though you're going fast, you are easier to hit in most cases. Whereas an afterburner makes you faster without increasing the size of your signature. So a Guardian, if I'm not mistaken, has a signature radius of like 70 meters, I think it is, which is actually really small. Most cruiser-sized ships will be over 100, if I'm not mistaken. I know the Auger is like 90. So they're actually really difficult to hit. Battleships are like enormous compared to that, you know, over 300, sometimes up to 500 if their shield fits. So, I'm not going to talk about the tracking formula or anything like that, but a small signature and lots of speed helps you avoid a lot of damage. You don't avoid it altogether, but you actually do mitigate a lot of it indirectly, simply because the enemies cannot hit you as easily. And then if you're ever being primaried in something like a Guardian, you can use transversal velocity to your advantage. So this means flying directly perpendicular to the direction of fire, so making it so that their guns have to move really quickly in order to keep up with you, and sometimes they won't be able to, especially if they're using rail guns or artilleries or any long-range weaponry close up. So this is probably the biggest thing for, you know, playing a Logi and, you know, what you should be doing at all times. So what you should really be focusing on, obviously, is repairing and assessing the incoming damage. So take like 2 seconds before the fleet starts to say, okay, I'm going to be looking for broadcasts, learn how to broadcast, this is how you do it. Educate your fleet members if you have to, because, like I said, the broadcast system is awesome. Make use of your watch list. Make sure that you prioritize those auxiliary ships and your fleet commanders. Again, it's a very, very powerful tool that you should always be using. Whenever you're fighting, just sit there and kind of observe and look at how much damage is incoming. If you feel that the damage is too much for you to rep, you need to let your fleet commander know so that you can begin to extract. Your fleet commander is going to be relying on the logistics pads to tell him if he's winning or losing, because it's not always obvious. And then the most important thing, obviously, is to, or as I've already said a couple times, is just to stay calm and just observe. Don't be afraid to overheat your modules, and definitely never panic, even if you're going to die. So some extra little tips that I wanted to throw in. You can pre-cycle your mods as you target someone. So you can actually, you can try this out with a gun too. Like if you're in a pocket with a rat, start targeting them and then activate your gun. And as soon as the target is acquired, your module will activate. So you can do this with repair modules as well. So if you're targeting someone who you know is taking lots of damage and needs to be repaired right now, you can target them, and then while they're targeting, activate all of your modules, and they will activate as soon as you acquire the target. Something else that you can do is you can overheat your mods before activating them. So they actually won't take damage unless they're active. So you can have all of your modules overheated, and as long as they're not active, they will not be damaged. So what this does is, generally what overheating does is makes them go faster, especially for repair mods. So if you really need to save somebody, you can target them, pre-overheat everything, pre-cycle everything, and as soon as they're targeted, your modules will cycle. And then one extra little blurb that I wanted to throw in is when you are fighting alpha fleets, so alpha strike being a large burst of damage where, you know, 20 ships all shoot at the same guy and try to just shot him. When you're going up against alpha fleets, what they're going to do is they're going to shoot a target, make you repair them, and then they're going to switch to a different target. So be very careful when you're up against tornado fleets and, you know, sniper battleships and anything like that, because they're going to target switch very quickly. So be on the ball with switching targets and repairing and then instantly stopping all of your modules so you can activate on the next guy. So be really wary wasting repair time with additional cycles when you don't have to. Okay, so that's the end of the PowerPoint. I have a couple things to go over before we start the practical. So I just want to talk about a couple different engagement styles or situations that you may be put into. If you have another target, I believe it will activate on them. What you can do, though, is you can click on the module and then click on the person in the overview, and it will activate on them as when they're finished targeting. It's kind of a quirky system that you kind of just have to mess with it to learn how it works. It's just funny how it works, but yeah, I would recommend that everybody just gives that a shot and tries out the pre-cycling. I'm just going to grab another drink here. My throat is really dry. I'm dying. Please give rep. Okay, so some general tips that I just wanted to throw out there. I didn't broadcast for rep. Please rep me. Alright, so some general tips just in general. If you're paying attention to anything, pay attention to this, because this is probably the most important thing, I guess, in the lecture. Make sure that you manage your targets well. Try not to lock too many people. It's tempting to lock up everybody in your fleet just so you can be like, oh, I can rep them, but you never know when you're going to have to target somebody else, maybe target something that's not in your fleet. So I always recommend keeping a spot open for targeting other things. The next thing that you want to be doing is micromanaging your drones. Like I said, drones are actually really useful, and a lot of people may not think that, but, you know, they could be free DPS, they could be extra reps, they could be ECM that's harassing the other Logi. So it's just, you always want to be using them. So even if you're just assisting them to someone else, then whatever. Probably the most important thing about flying logistics is managing your capacitors. So watch your cap, watch the mods that you're using, make sure that you don't overheat them and burn them out, but always be aware of what you have running on your ship. Don't leave something running and then suddenly cap yourself out. That's probably the most important skill, is just managing your capacitor. When you're flying in a squad, communicate with your fellow Logi. Make sure that you know the guys and how they communicate, and you're familiar with them so that you can be a cohesive group. I find that that's probably the most successful way, to just really be good at flying logistics in a squad. And then finally, constantly assess the situation. So, are your reps holding? Does the enemy have too much damage? Are you in danger of being killed or tackled? What kind of electronic warfare is on the field? What do I need to look out for right now? Where is my positioning? So positioning, capacitor management, target management, these are, the core skills to being a good logistics pilot. And then just a little extra blurb, when you're in null security space, burn out of bubbles immediately. In all cases, always no questions asked, unless you're told to, like, sit on the gate and don't move. Even if they're friendly interdictor bubbles, they can stop you from warping. But always burn out through the most direct route, unless it would lead you through the enemy fleet, and align to something once you're clear. Never sit around in bubbles. So I want to just talk about a couple different situations that you may run into when you're flying in a fleet. So the first is warping to a fleet on a gate. So this would be the enemy fleet is sitting on the gate and you are elsewhere in the system and you're about to warp to them. So as a logistics, you need to be prepared to warp in at range. So if your DPS fleet is warping directly at zero on the gate, consider warping at 20 kilometers behind them or something like that. That's what I usually do, is just go for 20. So if my fleet warps at 50, I'll warp at 70. sometimes the enemy fleet will jump through the gate, so you may be required to chase them through. So just follow your fleet commander's orders. If you know that he wants you to land at zero so you can jump through quickly, then just warp to zero. But if you're ever going to warp into a fight, warp in at range. It's always good to just have a little bit of space between you and the enemy fleet. Another thing that it's kind of commonsensical, but don't warp before your fleet. Give them a couple seconds of time to warp, especially, I don't know how the warp changes, the warp speed changes are going to affect this. I'm going to have to test it out, but generally you want your DPS to land on the field first so that you can kind of sneak in like 5 to 10 seconds later while the fight is going on, and maybe the enemies won't notice you, but they probably will, but at least you'll have that little bit of time to, you know, surprise them. When you're warping, you can overheat your modules ahead of time. So if somebody's like, ah, I'm dying, and you're in warp, and you know that you're going to have to rep them as soon as you land, overheat your mods while you're in warp, and then spam target as you land. So the first thing that you do when you should land is assess the situation. If you're in a kiting ship, activate your micro warp drive and start moving away. Align to something. Be very careful that you don't move too far away from your fleet, but keep your distance. If you're in a brawling ship, find your anchor. So usually what they will have you do is they will have you orbit one of the other logistics, who will then fly everybody around. So the anchor is just the person that everybody orbits so that they can focus on repairing. So if you're in a brawling ship, the first thing you want to do is anchor, and then get your capacitor chain running right away, and then start locking people up and start repairing. Yeah, I don't like flying Logi Hanker either. It's so much easier to just like click on one guy in orbit and not have to think about it. Ah, void bombs. I don't know if they break everybody. I think they might. I don't have high bomber skills, so I've never actually used them. I have flown for incursions, yeah. The focus of this is mainly on PvP. I did incursions after PvP and didn't have any trouble adapting to it. I found that a lot of the things were very applicable. But, the next situation is if you're jumping into an enemy fleet. So this is where you know that a fleet is on the other side of a gate and you have to jump into them. This is a little scary because you don't have any control of where you land on the other side or where you pop up, so it's completely possible that you decloak in the middle of the enemy fleet and you just get, like, bombed by everybody. So when the command is given to jump through the gate, let the DPS go through unless you're told otherwise. Sometimes the fleet commander will tell you to go through, so you can repair the first guy, but I generally like wait 5 seconds and let them all go. When you get to the other side, hold your cloak. So that means don't move, just sit there and look at what's going on, see where the enemies are, and just give yourself like that 5 to 10 seconds to just assess everything that's going on. It can make a world of difference to just sit there and get a feel for, you know, how the fight is going to possibly turn out because, you know, they have this many ships, or, you know, you can see what you need to worry about, or look for an opening so you can burn away. If you're in a kiting ship, it might be a good idea to overheat your micro warp drive so you can just, like, burn away super fast as soon as you decloak. Chances are nobody's going to be fast enough to catch you before you can burn away. If you're in a brawling ship, just decloak, turn on your tank and your afterburner, and just orbit the anchor, or sometimes they'll just have you orbit the gate. The most important thing when fighting on gates is that you stick with your fleet. Gate fights will tend to wander around. They'll eventually start to move off of gate, especially when one of the fleets is using a kiting setup. So you'll often see like a big trail of wrecks in a straight line coming off of a gate. So it's just really important that you keep in range of your fleet. When you're fighting on stations, and this is popular everywhere, I would say. I know it happens a lot in high sec. But when you're fighting on stations, consider warping in at range. So if you're warping to an enemy station, where you're not able to dock, warp in at like 20 or 30. Give yourself some buffer for anything that's undocking. Make sure that you do not aggress until you're ordered to do so by your fleet commander, and that goes for most situations, but it's really important when you're on a station, because maybe your fleet commander wants you to dock up or something. And be aware of what is docking and undocking from the station. It's completely possible that they'll just undock a triage carrier on you or something like that, so be watching your overview for anything new that comes out of there. And if they undock a Belgorn, run for your life, because those are nasty. When you're fighting in open space, so this is just any old pocket, it's really important to be aware of your surroundings. So an enemy or a fleet could warp in from basically any direction, so you always need to be prepared to warp away. When you're kiting and maintaining distance, a good strategy that I like to use, and don't tell anybody this, or if I ever fight against you, don't come after me. you can actually go above or below your fleet. I find that a lot of enemies just forget to look up. I've flown a rapier and an Arazu just like, you know, 30 kilometers above my fleet, and it's like the enemy fleet just didn't even know I was there. So it's so easy to just avoid them finding you just by being above them, because, you know, you're not in the thick of things, and a lot of people will use their tactical and just kind of look at it like, you know, a flat plane. So it's really easy to be unnoticed if you're above or below the fleet. So whenever I'm fighting in a big open space, I'll just like float maybe 30 kilometers above or below my fleet. If you're fighting in a gated pocket, this happens in complexes, missions, faction warfare areas, anything that has an acceleration gate. The only way to get in or out of a pocket that has an acceleration gate is to use the acceleration gate. So this means that anybody that's coming into the pocket will be landing at the same spot. So it's really important that you're aware of where the entry point is. If you're in a dead space pocket, watch out for the beacon that might be there, or just kind of watch out for where people are landing and stay away from that point. Another thing to be aware of, and this is especially important when you're flying like a kiting from like a scimitar, is if you do need to warp out, you're going to have to come through the acceleration gate to get back in. So if you do need to warp out, just be aware that you're going to have to warp back to the gate, and you're going to have to go through, and it's completely possible that you land inside the enemy fleet. So it's kind of dangerous to do that. One thing that I've had a lot of success with is hitting the gate and then just overheating my micro warp drive as soon as I land and just running for my life. Finally, and this is the last thing before we get to the practical. If you are told to disengage, and this is kind of just like a general fleet thing, but I thought it was important for Logi as well, so I'm going to cover it. If you're told to disengage or deaggress by your fleet commander, it means that he wants you to stop attacking so that everybody's aggression timer will go away. Or so you can just warp off. So the aggression timer triggers whenever you make a hostile action against an enemy. It stops you from docking or jumping for 60 seconds. Even if you're flying logistics, you will gain the aggression timer of anybody that you repair. So if somebody has a 60-second timer and you repair them, you will also get that 60-second timer. You will literally inherit the time that they have on their timer. When you're ordered to extract or deaggress, check to make sure that you're not making any hostile actions. So pull in your drones, turn off any smart bombs, turn off all of your guns if you have a horde gun, which I always do. Recall your drones and deactivate just any hostile mod. It's important, though, that you continue to repair your fleet. The goal is to extract without anybody dying, so it's still your job to keep everybody alive. Fleets will generally disengage by de-aggressing and then jumping through a gate or docking. The fleet will wait out a 60-second aggression timer, which stops them from docking and jumping, and then it will allow them to get to safety when it goes away. So when you de-aggress, what it does is it forces the enemy fleet to either continue trying to kill you, or they have to de-aggress as well and chase you. So in any case, you're going to have a few seconds to get away, because if you can de-aggress, you know, and they don't react for 5 seconds, then you have a 5-second window on the other side of the gate to get away before they can get through. And then, of course, if you're on a station, you can just dock up. In all cases, logistics should be the last things to exit field. If repairs are holding, a strong logistics core can easily sit and tank enemy damage while their allies get out or dock up, and then they can follow through. So usually what you'll see is like 3 Guardians sitting on a gate repairing all their guys as they jump through the gate, and then once everybody's out, the Guardians just go through as well, and the fleet warps away. Alright, that's it for the bulk of the lecture. Do we have any outstanding questions? We're going to start the practical after, you know, if there are any questions, but... Any questions? Did I cover everything?
I've got a bit of a skill question. I didn't follow your 101 course. I did follow a previous one, but I guess it didn't cover it. How important is it, in your opinion, to get logistics to 5 straight away, or is 4 plenty?
I flew with logistics 4 for like a year. Your ability to manage your capacitor is a personal skill. I mean, logistics 5 is great. I flew in Oneros with Logistics 4, which is very difficult because it's a very capacitor-intensive ship. But you can hold off on getting it to 5 for the most part. Like, for the longest time, what I was doing was I was waiting to remap my attributes so I could get Logistics 5 with the most skill points per hour possible, just because I'm really anal about my remaps. But for the longest time, I flew with Remote Armor Rep 4, Capacitor Transfer 4, Logistics 4, Cruiser 5, obviously, because it's required. But, and then I believe, let me double check my capacitor skills right now. So right now I have Capacitor Systems Operations, which is the recharge skill at level 5. I've had that at level 5 for a long time. It's a one times multiplier skill. So getting that one to 5 is really easy, and it helps out a lot. But I've flown with Capacitor Management 4 for a good while, and I did fly with it when I had Logistics 4 as well. And if you're flying Guardians, like, you'll always be cap stable if you have a chain going. It will be, unless you have like all the other skills at 1. But you can get away with Logistics 4 fairly well. Your fleet commander may not be too happy with you, but you can make it work. Does that answer your question?
yes, it does, for the most part, at least for PvP aspects. The only thing is I try to focus on Minotaur ships, because I try to implement a bit of a role play, but it's getting harder every the further I get into the game.
Mm-hmm. Scimitars are really, really cap intensive as well. But you can make them work with Logistics 4 as well. It's hard, it's really hard with Scimitar, especially because it's supposed to just go off of its passive regen. But, you can make it work. As long as you manage your mods really well and you're not, like, micro warp driving all day, then you should be okay. Don't tell the ISN this, but I flew with Logistics 4 in their fleets all the time with a scimitar. So, like, you know, it's not that bad. Absolutely blasphemous.